Today we are talking to Charlie Artuola, voted the International Wine Communicator of the World for 2012 by the International Wine and Spirit Competition in London. Welcome, Charlie.
Good afternoon. We're happy to be in Jackson Hole. What a pleasure.
What a pleasure to have you here, and what an honor. Tell us about this competition and the prestige that it holds for you.
Well, actually, believe it or not, the people behind this award, they picked me. I'm still actually awakening. But it's nice to see the list of Communicators of the Year, because this award was invented about 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. Jancis Robinson, one of my mentors, I will say, because I buy books from them. Hugh Johnson, another person that I've been buying books from them for the last 15 years of my wine career, they actually were the original winners of this award. So I'm in that list with this wonderful amount of people from France, from Germany, from the U.S., and I have to say that when you see the list, it's quite impressive, because many of these fellows and wine celebrities of the world, they have been, they've been going around for 25, 35 years.
First, tell me what sommelier means.
The definition of sommelier is the person who actually works in an establishment, okay, who buys the wine, who selects the wine, who sells the wine, and he's interacting with the client. So the sommelier word today, it's in America, we took something good and something bad, I will say, because, you know, Charlie had been working in Europe before coming to the U.S. I have to, every time somebody asks me, I say, well, Charlie actually made, for the longest time, both jobs. I mean, I can actually be the person who buys the wine, or I can be the person who sells the wine only. So I work in hotels, I work in cruise lines, I work in fine dining restaurants in the state of Florida where we reside. But my background is mostly to work in cruise lines. Back in the day when actually the cruise lines were the only good school to learn hospitality and gastronomy.
Oh, interesting.
So I spoke with an Italian lady, owner of a winery a while back, and she said, Charlie, you know, my father and my grandfather were from that school. But the definition of sommelier, of course, you know, on board of the cruise line, you're called wine steward because you're the one who carry the wine. Of course, you know, it's up to you if you sell it or not. But one of the things that we love to say when you speak in the United States, the function of the sommelier has so many connotations. I mean, you can be a wine expert, you can be a wine consultant, you can be the sommelier, because we all have a diploma or a certification. That nothing says that you are a sommelier. You are entitled or you are certified to be a beverage expert.
So, and what was that journey to even become an expert in wine? How did you start that interest?
Well, you know what? Somebody wrote this morning in Madrid in Spain and said, well, Charlie actually, you know, he spent 2,000-3,000 wines. I mean, he tastes 2,000-3,000 wines a year. I have a consulting up in Vancouver where I work every couple of months, and more than 14,000 cases of wine have been shipped there for the last 2 years, about 100 different wines, and maybe altogether 300-400 different wineries that I taste. But what really is good about the journey is that my dear wife here, Pandora, that for the last 6 years we've been having lots of fun and learning that there's life as a wine consultant. I mean, you will probably say, Charlie was not even able to make this great film that we're about to see here in Jackson Hole, El Camino del Vino, The Ways of Wine, if he was working at the hotel, Charlie probably wouldn't be here. But Charlie changed his way of life, thanks to his wife, my wife Pandora is here, that she said, you know, in a way, Charlie, you know, you speak five languages, you're well known around the world, you've been around the wine business for long, it's about time that you work for yourself. The journey, it's hard. The journey is that you have to wake up in the morning, 6 o'clock, and take a plane all the way to Vancouver and, show up at 1 o'clock, and voila, you're Mr. Wine, and you have to roll a show, and you got 75 people that they're expecting for you to speak the lingo they want to hear. So in order to buy 4,000 or 5,000 cases of wine. I mean, that is the good part. The bad part is that the next day you got to actually take a plane somewhere else. You know, I was telling Amanda right now that June is going to be crazy because from Vancouver to Friuli, northern Italy, and I got to disappear out of my house for maybe about 20 days. But when I see a vineyard, when I see a glass of wine, when I see a lot of friends and family, and of course, you know, if my wife is around, it's wonderful people like in Jackson Hole, Wyoming here. I have to say that, you know, we just here to have fun and teach the palates of Jackson Hole with, you know, a little bit of our journey of wine.
Well, I want to ask Pandora a question. Tell us some of your favorite, or at least one of your favorite stories traveling with Charlie as a wine sommelier.
Oh, dear. He will kill me for this one.
That's why I want you to tell it.
When we first started dating, I said to Charlie, because he was an expert on Italian wine and in particular on Piedmontese wines, and I had never been to Piedmont, although I'd spent a lot of time in Italy for years. So I said, let's go to Piedmont. And he was like, yeah, whatever. You know, we're going out to dinner and this chick is talking about going to Piedmont. So 9 months later, we were in Piedmont. And I wanted to take him to this place called the Hotel Belvedere, which is in the town of Lamora, which is one of the towns of
known for truffles and
Barolo.
And
he hadn't been, and I'd been. So we would go out every day and do all this stuff and come home and then, and you know, refresh and go back out. So we got home to the hotel we were staying at, and the guy was so cute. He'd opened up a 1958 and a 1961 Barolo, two bottles. Those are our birth years. I regret to say I am the elder of the two, with salami and cheese and whatnot. So we drank most of those, and then we decided to go to the Hotel Belvedere, and by now it's dark. So Charlie's driving, and we're in this little
wine thing. You're
it is.
About the car, right?
Yes, I am. Because I wanted to show him this incredible wine cellar. That was the whole point. They had the most amazing cellar with just, I mean, amazing stuff and old. But we never got there because Charlie was driving, and we always get lost. And we got stuck on a very steep road in a tiny Italian village, and there was rocks in the way. So we couldn't continue to go down. So first Charlie got out and tried to push the car backwards up the hill. I'm that's not happening. Right. And then, but it's a standard.
Right.
And Charlie doesn't drive. Now he does. Didn't drive standard in those days. And so after about 20 minutes of him being absolutely outraged that he could not get out of this, I'm like, get out of the car and I'm driving. So we finally, you know, the 1,000-point turn, and 2.5 hours later, we get this car back up the hill, and now he's driving again, and he says, okay, so now we're going to go down this road here. It's pitch black. I'm like, we are not going down any road. I'm going down to the bottom of the road, so I got to have a car and walk down, and there was a huge dog, and I came back up, and we never saw the Hotel Belvedere.
Oh, no.
It was just...
Is that before you were married?
That was the first year we were dating.
Oh, so that was the test.
That was the test. We did almost 3 weeks together traveling.
And but it's a wonderful story. Oh my goodness, I completely forgot about the car. We almost flipped the car down to the hill. I mean, oh shush.
What are some of your favorite stories, Charlie?
Oh wow! You know, I have to say one of my best sommelier stories is here in the Teton. Four Seasons up.
Oh, in the village.
In the village, yeah. Actually, I came here with a very dear friend of mine. He's Bernie San from Jean-Georges. Back then, we worked for the Tribeca Grill Group with, you name it, who is who in the wine business. And we actually, between five of us, we were like $25 million worth of wine, you know, five wine riders. And we come here with Robert Parker and the other fellow, Michel Roland. So Bernie says, guys, you're going to work a lot. And, of course, you know, we went to
the wine auction.
We went to the cabin, and for breakfast, you can see that every winemaker that shows up is someone in the world, from California to France and from Burgundy to Oregon. And I turn around, and, you know, Bernie said to me, Charlie, you know, I'm going to give you the front row, meaning you are my number one. Bernie, which you might know who he is, Bernie Sand, he actually said, you're going to be like the front guy. And I turned around and I said, oh, there's so much heat, meaning I turn around and I see Michel Roland, Robert Parker. You know, I'm talking about maybe 8 years ago, or 9 years ago, whichever time. But I said, oh, my God, I'm serving wine with the big leagues here. You know, and I just, of course, the only thing that you don't have to do is drop, you know, God forbid you drop a little bit of wine in those white tablecloths, you know. And here you are like a ballet dancer, you know, going like this. And at the last minute, Bernie said to me, Charlie, you know, they need someone at the California wine tasting. So who is there? One of our favorite friends from Schaefer, Doug Schaefer. And when Doug Schaefer actually sees me coming in, because he didn't actually feel comfortable with the other sommeliers working there, he knows someone who knows. I said, Charlie, you're in charge. I said, oh, my God, thank you so much. Of course, I can be American in America, you know, serving American wine. And they were probably the most expensive American wines to be served. And we were probably not even seven people. Of course, you know, with Robert Parker and Michel Roland, they were 200 people that morning. But I was so happy to be serving American wine with a friend from the wine country, a friend of Pandora from long time. And I said, you see, when in America, you got to serve American wine. Of course, you know, we are so happy to get the Benzingers backing us up this time. But that's probably one of my favorite anecdotes about, you know, the wine business. I can tell you thousands. I mean, to me serving the Prime Minister of Bermuda and, you know, and at the end drinking vodka and eating caviar. or probably getting to know, you know, Joe DiMaggio, someone you guys know very well in America, that mm-hmm. I did not know who Joe DiMaggio was. Uh-huh. I mean, and I used to deal with a guy almost every weekend. And, you know, that was probably one of my first years coming back from the cruise lines. And I knew the whole gang coming with this fellow named Joe DiMaggio. And, I, of course, you know, for my thing was, I'm not a baseball guy. I'm a dolphin guy. I love dolphin football.
Uh-oh.
So I'm sorry. I know I'm in a part of the country that they like you know, other teams. But what I love is that we have this this Saturday night, and I'm selling wine to Joe DiMaggio. And I sold Joe Poor Old Man, a 1951 bottle of Chianti Classico. And he said to me, are you sure the bottle of wine is going to be fine? I say, well, you know, it's been in the cellar for a long time, and who knows, you know. I chill the bottle, I get the bottle out, I open the bottle with my special opener, I see the cork. When I pour, the glass of wine was white, meaning
clear.
There was no pigmentation, this is what we call, and then Joe tells me, is that a wine that you recommend for $750? This is 1983. So I'm talking about, you know, 19 years ago. He said, so your wine is white, meaning, well, don't worry about it. It's kind of cloudy. We'll come back. So the story behind this is that, of course, he ended up drinking a bottle of Opus One, because that's what Joe used to drink everywhere, and he wanted to go Italian that night. And that bottle of wine, around 2 o'clock in the morning from 7 p.m., became the real Chianti color, because it came back to the color of wine.
That's interesting.
Because, you know, in the wine business, we always learn that the white wine turns into more amber and gets oxidized and get a little darker. Mm-hmm. The red wine loses pigmentation and goes the other way. When the wine actually breathes and respires and go back to the, you know, in a big decanter and you put it in a bigger recipient, you're going to try to get the wine a much more different color. And, of course, it needs to breathe 2 or 3 years. So then is when you learn that all Chianti Classicos, all bottles of wine, sometimes it's better to leave them to breathe for a couple of hours in order to drink it. So, but that was a Joe DiMaggio story for me. That was probably one of the most wonderful ones. Being a very young sommelier.
How has the wine industry changed over the years? Have you seen it change quite a bit in terms of
sells wine,
quality and, you know, just what's out there on the market?
It's changed a whole lot. In terms of the quality of wine, it's gone up exponentially in the last 25 years. I got into the business in 1987, and the California wine business had hardly begun in those days. So quality is up in part because we understand the chemistry better. We understand where to plant things now. We've done a lot of experimentation all over the world on planting various grapes in various places. The business of wine, regrettably, has changed at the same time like every other business, and consolidation has really taken over. So what unfortunately is happening today is there are hundreds of thousands of wines that will never that a consumer will never have the opportunity to buy because large companies control the market and the marketing dollars, and big brands are predominant, and the consumers have lost their loyalty, so they're now price point loyal as opposed to brand loyal. It's tough.
It's a tough market.
It's tough, but it's like anything. You know, in the 70s, it was all big corporate business. It was Pepsi-Cola and Nestle and everything, and they got out because bean counters don't like agriculturally based products like wine. It's way too risky and unpredictable. And the same thing I'm sure will happen again. These guys will figure out that it's not a solid way to make a buck.
Here's a layperson's question.
That's why the ways of wine, it's all about wine family.
That's right.
Oh, interesting. Okay. You know, the way they're selling wine now, from the twist-off tops to the corks to the kind of plastic corks?
Yeah.
Is there a preference?
Stelvin is the best. Twist off is the best.
In our
really?
Trade, Stelvin caps.
Oh, they call it Stelvin caps.
Stelvin caps. And they're the best for wines that you're not going to age. And 99% of the wine that's purchased in this country, well, 97% is drunk within a week. So the tiny amount, like old Bordeaux, good Italian wines, good Californian wines that will actually merit aging and that people can keep their hands off long enough to allow them to age. My husband taught me that. I was never able to do it. Those require corks because of you have to have an oxygen exchange.
Okay.
But their corks are bad
but in some respects. I remember the first time somebody brought that question up at me about I have to say I bring the quote of late Robert Mondavi saying that, you know, tradition is tradition. So the cork should be there. Now, there is something to say about the Sauvignon Blanc made in New Zealand, that you need to have it fresh, and you want crispy, and you want that natural flavor and aromas that, you know, of course, they come from the soil of the wonderful, you know, southern part of New Zealand. Or maybe a fresh, you know, Sauvignon Blanc in Napa Valley. I mean, I do believe that.
A little peat pool from France.
Oh, France. Yeah. I mean you see that happening everywhere. I mean, for Italians these days, we just came from Italy about a week and a half ago. And for Italians to have wines and changing the labels and making them more expressive and much more appealing for, as you know, what's happening now, there's the millennials. And millennials are actually something that I just been told is that. I think you mentioned that, honey. What's happening in the world? They're not loyal, but they buy an average bottle of between $15 and $22. Something that back then we didn't have. I can tell you, maybe in my early mid 80s, you know, get a bottle of wine around $10. That was a lot. And I have to say, when I learned to drink wine. And talking about your journey question is that when I went to Spain being 20 years old, I couldn't afford to drink Rioja wines because they were 10 pesetas. 10 pesetas were $3-4. But I was able to afford the wine from surrounding Madrid that they were about 10 or 15 cents of a peseta. So that's why I said I built up my palate from 10 cents, you know, and to the most wonderful wines in Bordeaux, which I collect and I adore, and I probably call Bordeaux my home country where I got the books of the wine business. Because Charlie probably is known in the wine world, but what Charlie was able to do, he learned to drink a lot of wine with his dad and family back in Uruguay, where he was born.
Right.
But then he went to Spain and expand his palate, drinking so many other wines and grapes. But he went to Italy, and in Italy, they show him so many vineyards and so many wonderful things behind the wine business. All that romanticism, all the beautiful, loving, you know, thing that we have about the wineries and families. And then, of course, I ended up in Bordeaux. I bounced back to Bordeaux, and I got the books, and voila, here we are with this incredible award and a movie, El Camino del Vino.
Tell us about your movie.
Sure. It's a beautiful story. I have to say, Pandora didn't believe in that at the beginning. She thought I was having a girlfriend down in Buenos Aires. Because
that is so not true. I am the moderator of expectations.
Pandora will come to the screen and say, who are these people behind that screen? Of course, we were in Skype until 3 o'clock in the morning and speaking, how are we going to do it? How is it going to happen? And, of course, you know, the whole story actually starts in Marco Island in the Gulf of Mexico in Naples, Florida. And it was someone who was my right hand, and he actually was so funny to say one day, Charlie, whenever I become a film producer, you're going to be the one that makes the wine movie with me, because you have to actually give something to my home country and the area where I was born, which is Mendoza.
So, I love Mendoza.
Yeah, Mendoza is where El Camino del Vino happens.
Okay.
As Michael Mondavi said a while back in Italy, say, Charlie, this is a wonderful opportunity for anybody in the wine business to watch that this movie is about the people of wine, an immigrant of wine like you are, mm-hmm. that brings wine everywhere around the world. And we know, you know, I know the Mondavi family for the last 20 years. One of the things that I have to say, since I came to America back in 1984, the first time I went to Napa Valley, the Mondavis were there for me. They opened the door for me, and I was about to work with the Mondavi family, believe it or not. But El Camino del Vino, it's a great story of a wine, of a wine families, together with a sommelier that loses his palate, but he's not trying to tell anybody, only tell his wife and tell, you know, his family that he needs to go back to his essence in order to get back on the road and come back to Florida where he belongs with his family, his wife.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. So it's a journey.
It's a great journey. I have to say it was tough to accept that Charlie will lose his palate, because it was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Right on, we just got married, and it was my father actually fine words was, it took 21 years of your life to find someone who loves wine and who breeds wine and who sells wine, who is my incredible wife over here. And, of course, right on that time, I've been told to first to do a pilot. Secondly, was to accept that if we do a wine tasting roadshow, nobody's going to watch it. And that's what the filmmaker will say. Charlie, if we put a bunch of people drinking wine in a classroom and you guys talking about wine, nobody's going to watch this. Unless
you tell a story.
You tell a story, and the story is going to be that you have to decide if it's going to be you or we go to someone else if you want to lose your palate. I was in shock. I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I said, how long I have? And then the fellow goes, 10 minutes. And I said, of course, you know, I was in Argentina. I wasn't in Miami. We actually did this in Argentina. And then I accept. And here we are. El Camino del Vino today has been in Berlinale, in San Sebastian, Spain, in Napa Valley. And we were probably the only Argentinian movie to win the FIPRESI Award, which is the best Latin America and international
documentary.
What's that? FIPRESI? What's the initials stand for?
I can't remember.
But it's an international critic award.
Right. It's by by your peers, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how the movie got to the world. Went to Berlin, and then, you know, this is our eighth film festival, but we've been translated to Chinese, to Danish, Croatian, Slovenia.
I can't wait to see it.
And yeah, people are going to love it. It's a great story behind. There's a little bit of drama. There's a little bit of funny stuff, of course. But what really is important behind this movie is that you learn a bit about wine. You learn a bit biodynamics. And as I say, in every single place we were around the world, is that it's the life of the sommelier between his wife and an Italian chef, In this case, happened to be Donato. Donato is a funny guy. You guys are going to see him. He's an incredible guy that is my confidant. He's the one who actually, he tells me what to do next. And, of course, I have my solo speak with my wife in Skype every day. And, of course, you know, it's like I come back to America or I stay with the chef and try to learn how I get my palate back. So we let everybody to, you know, to come over and see it.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being here.
Oh, we're so delighted to be in Jackson Hole and happy to be with my wife here that I've been promising to be here for the longest time.
Oh,
thank you so much, ladies. Have a wonderful program.
Well, have a good stay.
Thank you.
Thank you.